In this bonus episode, we'll be joined by director Barbara Shearer, whose new film, JFK What the Doctor Saw, which you can find on Paramount Plus, has been the talk of the JFK assassination research community as well as the national media. Today, we talk about how the film came to be and what Barbara has learned along the way on this bonus episode of Solving JFK.
In Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade in downtown Dallas. The first reports say that President Kennedy has been seriously wounded by this shooting. The flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time.
This is Solving JFK. I'm your host, Matt Crumpton.
So, Barbara, welcome to Solving JFK. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me, Matt. Good to see you.
Off the bat, congratulations on just creating such an incredible documentary. It's been, you know, I know a lot of people in the JFK assassination research world, and I was at the conference in Pittsburgh. Had some folks that I wrote a book with were at the conferences in Dallas, and across the board, your film has been very well received in the critical research community.
Oh, that's great to hear. I love that because there is a small subsection where I've got a little bit of backlash from a very small but loud JFK community, put it that way. And I wasn't always expecting that, but it's interesting. It's been an interesting ride. We really struck a nerve, and being Canadian, that was a bit surprising for me. And that's probably the only reason I didn't realize. I mean, I knew I was going into territory that's very much in the grain of American, you know, history and culture and all that. So I knew I had to be careful a little bit about how well we treated the subject matter. But yeah, it's been interesting, that's for sure.
Well, if you don't mind, can you unpack a little bit about, you know, what community it is, not people, but like what subgroup has given you the most pushback, you feel like?
It's obvious. And honestly, I'm fine with it. It's not a big deal for me at all. I can completely defend my position in the film. And, you know, I don't have a huge, I'm not a JFK aficionado at all. But I definitely did my homework for the area in which I was looking at. So that's where I feel quite confident in. But there's so many offshoots of this enormous beast of a story that I don't pretend to know that much about it. But those who are, it would be the community of Three Shots From Behind, Oswald as a Lone Gunman community.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. That's where the backlash. And honestly, it's not major. I'm just having fun with you a little bit. But it was interesting to get some emails and some flack over this show. Mm-hmm. So I love hearing all this to say. I love hearing that it's being well received in other communities. That's great.
Yeah. Well, good. Well, I wanted to just kind of ask you just to start out. How did you first get started in the world of film and television?
Yeah. Listen, I guess the sort of short answer would be I've always been attracted to real stories and real people. Even as a kid, I was reading nonfiction and I loved true crime. And I had to think about this because I had a feeling you might ask this question. And so I was thinking, how did I get involved with, why do I like nonfiction so much, which is, which then led me to documentaries. And I just think I really had an affinity towards true crime at a very young age. I found it fascinating. I find the characters interesting. I'm a storyteller by nature. I'm an English major. I've, you know, so it was just sort of a natural progression to move into the world of, finding really good stories, real people to tell them, and all that kind of stuff. So that's sort of always been in my DNA for some reason. And then I kind of cut my teeth. Well, not kind of. I cut my teeth at CBC, which is the Canadian federal broadcaster, very similar to BBC in the UK. So most people in my business, in my industry in Canada, have cut their teeth at CBC in one way or the other. We all pass through those doors. And again, it was on a series that was doing interviews with about real stories and real people. And so I just continued and found mentors along the way. And yeah, I love documentary. I love it. And I love it. Rather than news, I'm more interested in investigative reporting. And I would like to dig deep. I'm not interested in short spurts. I like long form investigative pieces.
Yeah, well, you do a nice job with them, so it makes sense that you would like something that you excel at. So speaking of that, you've worked on, just some of the films you've done recently, aside from JFK, What the Doctor Saw, Epstein's Shadow, Ghislaine Maxwell, Banished, Prince Andrew, and then Loving Elvis. Which is that out? Or
Elvis, they all are streaming. I've got Loving Elvis came out the day before JFK, which is interesting. So I had two major series or doc series on the same week in November airing. So that's on Peacock right now. JFK is on Paramount Plus, and Banished and Ghislaine and Epstein's Shadow, Ghislaine Maxwell are both on Peacock as well.
How does something like this come to be? Like, what's the typical genesis of, going from an idea to actually people seeing it on their screens?
Sure. And you know what, Matt? It's different every single time. But the best position for me to be in is bring my own IP right to the table. And with the Epstein's Shadow, Ghislaine Maxwell, that's a good example. I've done it with other shows and I've done it with other projects, but those are the ones, we'll stick with the ones that are probably very high profile. So that one was my own idea. I've been working on an Epstein piece since 2017, and no one even knew who the guy was. And then when he got arrested, everyone was on top of the Epstein wagon and pursuing stories with Epstein when he was in prison, and then or jail, I should say. And then I was like, forget him, right? I knew that there were going to be 20 million documentary companies on top of that. So I just pivoted and said, let's look at Ghislaine Maxwell, way more interesting individual, way more complicated story because of her father. And so I brought that to the to a production company, basically fully formed too. I had done 18-page treatment, and I had about 25 interviews on board confirmed. So in that respect, that was mine and my vision and all that kind of stuff. With other ones like a Loving Elvis or and as for Banished, the Prince Andrew, that was just an adjacent story coming off of the Epstein. That we had already gotten into Epstein, and he was a colleague of Epstein's, et cetera. So that was a natural offshoot to do 90
Right.
minutes on that guy. So that was how that came about. For Loving Elvis, that was brought to me by a production company about, they had a bunch. We want to see Elvis, the real man, not the myth, through the eyes of the women who had dated him. So I interviewed something like 17 of his ex-girlfriends. Yeah, it's pretty hilarious. It's fun. It's like the Housewives of Elvis. And with that one, that was brought to me, but then I kind of, give me an inch and I'll take a mile, and I just ran with it, and it becomes sort of my vision. And so that's how that developed. And then what happened, because I did Elvis originally for Paramount Plus, I did it for the two network executives, Susan Zirinsky and Terry Wrong, who are, I should say, are like network icons at Paramount and CBS. And because they had worked with me at Elvis, as almost as soon as I wrapped Elvis in December, they pitched me the JFK show. So again, those two weren't mine, but I just took it and then ran with it.
Cool. Wow. You cover some sort of controversial topics between JFK and, Ghislaine Maxwell, Epstein. Elvis is kind of fun, but the other ones are your more high profile ones are, kind of
Heavy.
spicy, as I like to say sometimes. Yeah. So, I guess when you do a project like that or like JFK, and I guess JFK is a little bit more stale than the Maxwell Epstein stuff. Do you were you ever were I guess specifically on the Epstein Maxwell stuff, were you ever you ever think you're kind of getting in over your head, or did you ever like have concerns for your safety or?
Definitely not with JFK. You're right about that. There was none of that. No fear, no nothing. JFK was really, really interesting. I know we're going to focus on that, so we'll get that to that. Such a great project to work on. But Maxwell, yes, there was a little bit of that because that's the type of story that's going to take you into some very dark corners, and it did. And you're going to meet some really sketchy individuals, and I did. And some guys, I wasn't that afraid though. I mean, maybe the only thing you'd be afraid of really, and I don't mean afraid, but you would wonder about if your phone is being tapped or something like that, because we did delve into a little bit of the intelligence connections between Jeffrey Epstein having intelligence connections, which he certainly did, and also Ghislaine Maxwell's father did, and the family might. So that's where you're getting into a little bit of areas that people don't want you to go down. And so I did have a little bit of pushback a few times, but nothing where I felt threatened. Nothing. I have worked on other shows though, because I do a lot of true crime where I have been threatened for sure,
Yeah,
but not
wow.
those.
All right, let's talk about JFK what the doctor saw. So you were the and I read this because as I was talking to you about this project, I guess I thought of you as sort of just the one running the show, but I didn't really know what your title was. But I found out that you were director, showrunner, and executive producer. And so I guess can you talk just a little bit about the background of how this film in particular, the JFK one, came to be?
Yeah, it's such a great story. So, like I said, I wrapped Elvis last December, right around this time, and then Terry Wrong at Paramount called me after that and said, "Listen, we got this project. We've got 100 hours of tape on these doctors that these other two this couple, Jacqueline Luth and Bill Garnett, had shot 10 years earlier in 2013, okay? And they're executive producers on the series just as well. So they had already shot the doctors, right? 10 years earlier. Jackie had a connection. One of her personal doctors was a friend of one of the doctors in Parkland, and that's how it all developed for that couple. So they realized, they were like, why don't we get these guys on tape before they pass on? And so they did. So, Terry comes to me and says, we've got this treasure trove of, hundreds of hours of footage on these doctors. Here you go, and let's make a film about basically what happened in that day in Parkland through the eyes of the Parkland doctors. And so the senior producer and I, Sarah Namias, who I work with on Elvis as well, she and I got, we were, we got Over, we forensically studied about 2,000 pages of transcripts. Okay. And that's how we approached the show and began to see it develop, right? Like, and that's how we knew what we had to tell, which was their observations and what they thought. And we also know, some of it to some people is shocking or of interest, I should say. But basically, we had to structure a 90-minute comprehensive story around these guys and what they saw and what that meant to the president and the assassination.
If you listen to Solving JFK a lot, you know that I like to keep the vibes up. And that's why I'm a fan of federally legal cannabis from Mood.com. It's a brand that uses small organic farms to source its pesticide-free legal weed. You can get 20% off of your first order at Mood.com by using code JFK. My favorite product of theirs is the functional THC gummies. Usually I go with Epic Euphoria, but I also like Magic Mind and the Pure Relief CBD gummies. These legal weed gummies take about 20 minutes to kick in, and you can control the dosage yourself. Unlike the federal government,
Mood.com has never sold drugs to fund illegal wars or clandestine missions. Thanks, Mood.com. So try out some of the excellent legal cannabis products from Mood.com and get a 20% discount off of your first order using code JFK. The holidays sneak up fast, but it's not too early to get your shopping done and actually have fun with it. Uncommon Goods makes holiday shopping stress-free and joyful with thousands of one-of-a-kind gifts you can't find anywhere else. The products from Uncommon Goods are high quality, they're unique, a lot of times they're handmade, and they're made in the United States. Many are crafted by independent artists and small businesses. And because they're made in small batches, the best finds can sell out fast. I can't tell you how many times I've gone to Uncommon Goods when I didn't know what to get that person who seemed to already have everything. Another great thing about Uncommon Goods is that they give back a dollar to a nonprofit partner of your choice every time you buy something. So far, they've donated over $3 million to nonprofits. So shop early, have fun, and cross some names off your list today. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/JFK. That's uncommongoods.com/JFK for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods. We're all out of the ordinary.
So the transcripts that you were saying you studied, so like deposition transcripts from interviews
that Jackie and Bill did.
Oh, okay.
The video of it. We had the, you know, like 10 hours.
Oh, transcripts of the content that you had.
And then, right. Because there's, but to your point, I studied all the other transcripts too. I mean, that are in, you know, autopsy and we went down a rabbit hole and read like 6 books, and not that that's a lot of books in this community of JFK, but it's like enough to sort of, but the focus was always about the medical, you know, it was always about, pun intended, the body of evidence and following the body, right? From Parkland to Bethesda and the differences, you know, it's like, one, here's Parkland on one side, here's Bethesda on the other. As it turned out, no one, you know, who knew that there were going to be such disparity between those two worlds, but there was. And I didn't know what I was going to see and hear and what they were going to say and all that kind of stuff. So that's what I mean about transcripts. So really, you have to develop your structure your story around the doctors.
What did you know about the JFK assassination? You know, when they pitched the idea of this to you before you looked at any of the material, what did you think of in your mind when you think about the case?
The first thing I thought of is, why me? I can't believe they've given this to me, because so I immediately wanted to make sure I didn't disappoint. I'm going to be honest. Like, I'm just, being a Canadian, of course I know about JFK. Of course I saw the Oliver Stone movie. Of course I know about the Warren Commission. But I mean, very, very, in such a superficial way, right? And I, of course, I've read various conspiracies, et cetera. But again, I never delved deeply into this. It's not something with my Canadian educational background that was a focus of any of my history courses, you know? Everyone knows about JFK. Everyone knows about the assassination. And I knew about as much as everyone else in that respect. It was also, the assassination was before I was born. So again, it's not like, I have a real, you know, oh, I remember when, you know, and all that kind of, I don't have any sense memory of that kind of thing, or, you know, my parents having that or any of that. So I really was surprised that they handed this to me. I'm so thrilled they did, but yeah, that was my first reaction. And then I went, okay, this is also a subject matter that you can't mess up, because it is such a sensitivity in American history and with Americans. And I was very, that was always on my shoulders when I was going through this. So I better know what the hell I'm doing, and I better know the material inside and out. And that's what I just got started in that way.
Sure. In terms of the footage that was used. So you have the footage that was filmed in 2013. It was that like cleaned up in any way? It looked so crisp. It was like super duper high def. Did you guys have to do stuff to that?
No, they shot it. I mean, it was 2013, so it wasn't
Okay.
I think I'm pretty sure it was HD. But what we did is we did treat it in color correct because we wanted to make sure the audience, and I don't know if it was effective enough, but we wanted to make sure the audience knew that it was older and different material. Even if it wasn't old enough to look really kitschy, cool, treatable, you know what I mean? It wasn't like 70s or even 90s looking, you know what I mean? It was modern enough where we're like, okay, we can't do too much here, but we definitely treated it to look in the color correct, to look different than, say, your interview. Well, the three that I shot, which I interviewed, was Doug Horne, Michael Bodden, and yourself. So those are the three original interviews that are in the show to balance out the doctors and bring in other perspectives, et cetera, or explain and give context to a lot of what was happening at Bethesda and Parkland. And that's why I brought the three of you in. And they were shot very, very differently and look
Right.
very different.
Yeah, and then the other type of footage you had is, just sort of like the archive footage, which I mean, just watching that, you did such a you and your team did such a masterful job of putting that together in a way that was, very aesthetically pleasing. And I thought did a nice job of sort of preserving the historical record and displaying it in a easy to understand way.
That was important. Excuse me to interrupt. Really, really tough to take. And again, no bad, I don't have a medical background, you know what I mean? So I'm assuming though, honestly, in some ways, I was the best choice for this because I am the audience. You know what I'm saying? I'm not too behind the curtain on, with this particular subject. And so that is your audience. It's a broad audience that didn't that so I was always putting myself, I always do anyways, what will make sense for the audience? And let's really distill this down. And I'm telling you, when it got to the autopsy and trajectories and bullets, et cetera, that was, we were pulling our hair out to make that about as like understandable, comprehensible as possible to a broad audience. And that means it's comprehensible to me. You know what I mean? And we were in the weeds with that aspect of it. And that's why I brought in the cards, the picture
Right.
cards. That was really important because people have to understand and picture it. And you don't have a lot of cover. Like, I don't want to get into, but you don't have a lot of B-roll or cover for that kind of stuff. You have to really show the audience what you're talking about. So, anyways, yeah.
I can't imagine what it would be like to not be, someone who studied the case for 20 plus years, like a lot of people in the that are familiar with the details of the case, and then to come into a situation and go, hey, okay, you're gonna put this film together, and oh, by the way, here's all this archive footage. Pick the right thing, and then you'll put together like the perfect story. Pick the wrong thing, and then you'll or miss something important. It would have been so, I'm just saying, kudos, because that would have been a challenge even to someone who's done this a lot to find the right stuff. I mean, things pop up that I don't know about all the time.
It was
So,
super daunting. It was
yeah.
super daunting because I knew we were going to, you, I just knew there would be a backlash if I got one little thing wrong.
Right. Well, okay, and then let's talk a little bit about the substance of the film. Kind of what's presented is that the Parkland doctors generally have broad agreement that there's a large wound of the hole in the right rear of Kennedy's head, and that also that the neck wound was an entrance wound based on their initial statements. And then you look at the Bethesda evidence to sort of contrast, no, actually, if you look at the autopsy, back of the head's intact in the photos, it's intact in the x-rays as well. I guess, do you think that most people, so you're talking about yourself as sort of the prototype audience member, do you think most people realized before the film that there was such a different story between Parkland and Bethesda? Because that really was the theme, and people who have seen it who don't know much about the case, that sticks out to them right away. I mean, that point was hammered home.
I don't think most people knew. Probably I certainly didn't know, but again, I'm not probably, but I also didn't like grow up with this story hanging over me or anything, but I certainly didn't know there were such discrepancies between the two hospitals, and so I'm assuming the audience didn't either, and I'm probably fairly correct in that.
And what I like about this topic, obviously it's a gory topic and it's a technical topic, so like it's kind of a double whammy for a lot of people. But what's good about it is that what you've presented isn't disputed. Okay, so in other words, obviously the assassination is totally disputed. The medical evidence remains disputed, but it's not disputed that these were the observations of the doctors. This is what they said, this is what they wrote down, and the autopsy is what it is, right? So I like these bodies of evidence where we have agreement as to what the facts are, and it's a question of, okay, well, what is your inference based on those facts, right? And there are people, about 30, 40% of people, when given the choice, hey, we got f the number's 43 people that are on the record as having said their initial statement that there was a hole in the right rear of Kennedy's head. 43. Now, some of them did retract their statements, and some of them did later say, well, I suppose it theoretically could have been possible that it wasn't or whatever, right? So that is true. What I'm saying is, so 43 initial statements that there's a hole in the right rear of the head versus the autopsy evidence being forged. Otherwise, if that's not true, you got to pick a lot of, a fair number of people given that Rorschach test will go, well, we know for sure that the autopsy is not forged because this is the United States of America. So let's foreclose that possibility. And it seems nonsensical that 43 people could be wrong, but a lot of them changed their statements. So, but I guess, yeah, it's just a very simple, like, well, what do you see when you see this body of
Well,
information?
I think, yeah, the one thing's coming up for me. I also think what we find, or what I've discovered along the way, having heard now so many people, comment, and some of the write-ups, et cetera, et cetera. So a lot of people still can't make that leap. And it like it's we don't get too much into the magic. Well, we do. We actually do get into the magic bullet, but about like leaving the bullet on the gurney and all that kind of stuff. We didn't get it. It's not like we didn't want to. We didn't have time, and also it wasn't developed enough in terms of the sound bites that we had. But I always think it's interesting that LBJ, Lyndon Johnson, the president at the time, and Connally, Governor Connally, both think that the magic bullet or the single bullet theory is ridiculous. Okay, ridiculous. But they never, and we have it on, and they say it in the documentary. We got LBJ in audio, and we have Connally in audio video in the doc saying as much, but they never make the leap to say, so therefore, the Warren Commission doesn't stand up. Like, so I'm always amazed at that. Like, there's never the, and I do think so. The 43 people, it's getting back to what you were just saying. The 43 people that believe they saw, or believe there was a hole in the back of his head, or it's sort of like the lower right behind the ear area of the skull of JFK, and then some retracted it. I do believe there was pressure. I do believe people get nervous. I do believe that they no one wants to admit, and I think it was worse sort of years ago, that they just didn't want to go against the government narrative. And I think maybe that's why they retract, and sort of even some of the doctors weren't ready to come right out and be that frank.
This episode of Solving JFK is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations. Did you know your calendar age doesn't always match how old your body really is? It's true, your biological age, the age of your cells and organs, is actually the number one predictor of your risk for serious diseases like heart disease, cancer, dementia, and more. That's why learning your biological age can be truly life-changing, and that's exactly what the True Age test from True Diagnostic helps you do. With just a simple at-home test, you can uncover your true biological age and get personalized insights to help you take control of your health like never before. No doctor visits, no labs, just a quick finger prick from the comfort of your own home. True Diagnostic doesn't just tell you your biological age, it gives you a personalized report that's full of clear, science-backed steps that you can take to actually slow down aging and improve your health over time. If you care about protecting your health and want to find out what your real age is, head over to TrueDiagnostic.com. You can use the code JFK to get 20% off your entire order or subscription. That's TrueDiagnostic.com and use code JFK at checkout to get 20% off. Your future self will thank you.
So where do you land? What inference do you make given after having worked on this project as to whether or not there was a shot from the front, given this body of evidence?
I absolutely believe there was more than one shooter.
Yeah.
And that the neck was a shot from the front. I also think the exit wound for the neck wound is not the back of the head, though. I think the neck wound dead ended. And you can see it. I mean, it didn't exit immediately. You see it in the Zapruder film. Like, he grabs his neck. And by the way, that's the one, you know, Connolly's fine. Connolly is fine and, you know, moving about when he grabs his neck and Jackie's looking over at him. I mean, the back of his head's fine. So, and it did, and nothing came out the back of his neck either. You just see this. So and I'm going about that from watching Zapruder, not just what the doctor said, but knowing that knowing now that entrance wounds are tiny and exit wounds are large, that absolutely bolsters my opinion that this was an entrance wound and it came from the front.
Yeah. Either that or there was a mass hallucination of 43 people who saw the same thing, some of them at Bethesda, some of them at Parkland.
Yeah.
All right, so just a couple more questions for you here. I recently on Twitter, aka X, which I'm never going to call it X. Sorry, Elon, calling it Twitter, buddy. A user named @doitformama replied to one of Gerald Posner's tweets about Oswald being the lone assassin. And then he said that Posner should watch JFK What the Doctor Saw. Now, to full context and Posner's defense, he also then called Posner a joke. So he's not coming in neutrally. He was kind of throwing a bomb.
Oh, really?
He threw a bomb at Posner. And then he goes, and you're a joke. You should watch JFK What the Doctor Saw to find out what really happened. Yeah. And then Posner responded. And he said, quote, "Sorry, what is a joke is the Paramount documentary. How about checking what the primary treating Parkland Hospital doctors and autopsy physicians told me in detailed interviews I did with them in 1992? Their detailed accounts totally contradict the documentary." He then had images of citations to his book, Case Closed. And when I saw the images, what I thought he was going to have, like, transcripts.
That's
like
what I thought you were going to say. Yeah.
In the book, or, you know, in your film, this person, you know, Dr. McClellan says this at this point. Well, when I interviewed him, he said this. It turns out the screenshots that Posner shared were images of the footnotes of his book, which referenced interviews that he did with the authors. So it would be like, interview with Dr. McClellan, interview with whatever. So I asked Mr. Posner, do you have links available so we can look at these transcripts? As I'm in an interview, I'm going to be speaking to the woman that's behind the film. I'd like to give her a chance to respond. can you provide your interview notes so I can even assess what you're saying? And he did not respond. So that's where, would you care to comment on that one way or the other?
Well, sure. I have no problem commenting on it. I didn't see that. But I can only say that my entire, like our entire, I shouldn't say my, there was a team. It takes a team to make this show. We only dealt with the material we were given, and what we were given is, you know, at least 15 hours of interviews with seven of the Parkland doctors, and then James Jenkins, which I think we should talk about, who's the last remaining team member at the Bethesda autopsy. But so I just went with the material in front of me. Okay. I didn't go with Posner's material. And if it's 1992 that he interviewed them, and Jacqueline Luth interviewed these doctors in 2013, I'm inclined to believe what they said later in life than what they said earlier. I don't mean believe. I'm inclined to lean into what they said later in life, which is the material I'm dealing with, as opposed to what they said in 92. And the reason being is, they were probably still practicing doctors in 92. They have a lot, it's a lot of higher stakes to go against the grain and go against a government narrative. This is just conjecture on my point. I have no idea what's going through these doctors' minds in 92. But I think what we got them at is a time when they were towards the end of their life. They have no more worries. And they probably want to get the truth out there. And they don't have any fear. I don't know what they were going through in 92, but that's like 25 years prior to when they were interviewed the next time. And so I'm more confident with what the material we got was than what Posner had.
Right. We also don't even know if there actually are any conflicts because we haven't.
Yeah, I can't speak to that. I mean, I thought that's what you were going to say when you said he screen grabbed, and I'm like, oh great, give me the screen grabs, because I, like I said, I forensically studied the transcripts. I mean, I saw them on. I mean, we cut it in the edit suite, but like really, the transcripts are your Bible, right? So I know what these guys said, and so I'd love to know what the contradictions were.
Yeah, and Mr. Posner, if you hear this and you'd like to come on anytime, happy to have you on sometime to chat. Now that you have, you're an expert on the medical evidence to some extent, you just having put this film together, you had to make yourself one. Has it piqued an interest in the case for you? Like, are you, I'm trying to think of the right way. Is it something that's still like sort of separated in your mind, or is it something that now you're like thinking about more, I guess? I don't know.
No, I'm definitely a convert. I'm definitely a convert, Matt. I mean, Now I'm in. I mean, I can't, I don't know. You know, Rob Reiner's got a new podcast out that's really, really good. I love it. I love yours, but I was listening to yours. So a lot of these documentaries that were made over the years, and there's like so many, there's a really great one that came out of the UK made years ago. I think it was in the 80s or 90s about the JFK assassination. But anyways, I'd already gone down that rabbit hole while I was making the show too. So I really did read everything as much as I could, watch everything. And so I definitely, I'm now so fascinated with the subject matter. I'm not an expert though, by any stretch of the imagination in most of the other areas. I did have to really dive into the medical aspect of it so I would get it right, because getting it wrong would have been disastrous, frankly. So that area I'm very confident in, but now I'm definitely so fascinated with all aspects of this crazy story.
I'll tell you what, when I saw that you reached out and you were doing this, anytime something cool comes in, you're like, probably too good to be true. It's probably not a thing, but it ended up very much being a thing. And, just funny, just explaining to people in my circle, How'd you get in this JFK assassination documentary? I'm like, well, you see, she had the guy who was the head of the medical records, the like most respected forensic pathologist in the United States. He was the head of the HSCA medical records, so she already had him. And then she had the guy that was the head of the military records for the ARB. So she needed a guy who had a podcast for a year to come in and break it down for everybody and tell them what was up, right? Like that was the thing.
I know. And honestly, it's not like I know it might sound crazy, but I really thought, first of all, you're not just a guy with a podcast. I did my homework and you have studied this for 20 years and you know your stuff. And I really liked, and I said this to you, I loved that you were looking at this entire subject matter from the lens of a lawyer who could defend both sides. And I thought that was the perfect middleman, frankly, between Michael Bodden and Doug Horne. And that was why, and that's what you brought to the show. And that's why I thought you were really invaluable.
Well, thanks again for having me on. I mean, it was big for me, so I very much appreciate it. So you said you guys didn't get into who killed Kennedy in the documentary, which I think is probably one of the reasons why it is so universally well received, because you
Yeah.
don't try to speculate. Because as
That
I'm
was
learning.
really purposely done, really purposely done, and a very, very firm directive. Terry Wrong, so like I said, my two execs are Susan Zirinsky and Terry Wrong, who are amazing, amazing. And I don't say that about every executive, certainly not, but they're two fantastic, smart executives. Terry Wrong has a real passion, though, for this subject matter. He was the one that really knew. He knows tons about it, and he's so he was. We obviously we talked about it ad nauseum as a team about how we're going to structure this, right? And that was really, and it wasn't out of fear or anything. I mean, everyone's like, oh, did Paramount, tell you couldn't do this or could, and I had none of that, none of that. I had free rein, free will, whatever. But really, it's such a broad subject. Instead of coming across as sort of touching on so many aspects of it and sort of like a superficial approach to another anniversary, right, of the assassination. No. We wanted to really dive deep into one particular aspect. And because we had, the seven doctors, the tape of the seven doctors, that's really, it was a no-brainer to really stay with the body. And that's really how we stayed focused on the show and how I could best structure it without kind of going, because there were so many directions to go in and it, almost, too many, too many. And so that was purposely done that we stay with this one area and be experts on that one area.
And you really didn't get any pushback from Paramount, you said.
Nothing,
That
nothing. Not,
that's
I swear to you, none of it. They were fantastic.
That was what I was interested to see, because when I, and just zooming out here, people that have studied this for a long time, maybe more people who are maybe more prone to question things that when they hear them, you know what I mean? And sort of look at things with a more critical eye, let's say, I think have a lot of skepticism about big productions, meaning like big broadcasting, things that have a wide audience, right? Like things that are backed by companies like Paramount. My experience, my first thing was, okay, are you going to be cool? And then my second question was, is the network going to be cool? Right. And so I knew I could tell right away, just from the questions you were asking, I'm like, oh, she's legit. This is like, she's really going for it. This is something. And then to hear that Paramount was okay with it, I guess that's, it was, I just want to like let everybody know that wonders how these things happen. There are real people out there that are still trying to figure out objective truth, and sometimes they're able to get things through on major networks. And to the folks that may not be familiar with your work, I'll tell you, Barbara Shearer is somebody who's looking for the truth. And I think that we are we're blessed to have you in the game, looking out for the people, Barbara. I'm serious, like just like pursuing controversial topics, yes, I'm sure it gets ratings and people are interested in it, but there's a reason that other people don't do it. So thank you.
Oh, great. Oh, thank you. That's a really, really nice compliment. And I don't, I will say though, It's nice to be seen that way because it's exactly what I set out to do with my career and with the subject matter. I hate the bullshit. I hate the superficialities. I hate skimming the surface. Give that to somebody else. Let's get down to brass tacks and figure out and talk to real people and get to the or try and find out as much as push as much as we can to get as clarity and as much authenticity as possible in any given subject matter. And that's what we certainly did with this show, I hope. And I really didn't get pushback from the network. I really didn't.
Excellent. Well, that speaks well of Paramount, also. So,
Yeah.
anything else you have coming up that you want to promote, talk about?
I don't. I wish I did. I don't actually. I think having two big shows come out in November has been my focus right now between and honestly covering a JFK and then covering an Elvis. I think I've covered a lot of American icons. Enough American icons. I'm looking to do a little quieter story next.
Yeah.
But no, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. It's been a really interesting eye-opening experience covering American icons because there's big communities out there that have a lot to say about these guys, and it's and I actually welcome it. I find it really
Yeah.
fascinating. I really do.
Well, great. Well, thanks again, and obviously thanks for the opportunity for me, and thanks for coming on the show today. Barbara Shearer, you can catch her films everywhere, but right now she's got JFK with the Doctor Saw on Paramount Plus, Loving Elvis on Peacock, Ghislaine Maxwell on Peacock, and Prince
Yeah,
Andrew.
yeah. I don't know if I think it's still streaming. It's a
FP
couple
and
years.
Shadow, Ghislaine Maxwell, and then Banished, Prince Andrew, and then Loving Elvis is also on Peacock. Okay, you got a lot of stuff out there. So,
Thank
all right, thanks, Barbara. Oh,
you, Matt. Thanks for
okay.
having me.
In Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade in downtown Dallas.
The flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time.
Thanks for listening. Visit solvingjfkpodcast.com for more information.
I'm just